We were quite shocked to find that both tariffs and tariff confusion mattered.
Between February and December 2025, there were 53 announcements from the US government about tariffs being introduced, delayed, reinstated, or otherwise fiddled with. My guest today has evidence that this tariff chaos is damaging trade.
Tariff confusion, on average, doubled, the detrimental effect of the tariff hikes themselves.
Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Center for Economic Policy Research. I'm Tim Phillips. If you are a business that needs to pay tariffs when you export to the US, these days, do you know how big that tariff actually is? A new CEPR discussion paper suggests that confusion about tariff rates, as much as the actual level of those tariffs, is effectively acting as a tax on trade, but that's a tax that's raising no revenue. Kalina Manova of UCL and CEPR is one of the authors of the paper. She joins me now. Kalina, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Hello, Tim. Great to be here.
Kalina, why are tariffs changing so frequently these days? Has this ever happened before?
It's quite remarkable. It really is unprecedented. We are used to seeing countries using trade policy. Whether effectively or not is a different question, but of course, changing your tariff stance is not something new. However, what made US trade policy in 2025 special was its frequency, its nature, and its complexity. We went back in time. We looked at the last 150 years or so when we didn't see any other episode that was anywhere comparable to this level of frequency and complexity. So to give you a sense, yes, you mentioned the 53 announcements within 11 months, but that spanned revisions that affected some countries, some products. And just to put this in perspective, just in those 11 months, there were 32 revisions at the product level. And that's three times as many as you would see over a regular period, twice as many as you saw during the 2018-2019 China-US trade war. So that's on the frequency. In terms of how these policies were introduced, that was quite unprecedented as well. So they're normal routes within the remit of the WTO agreements. Here instead, we had presidential executive orders and proclamations that were based on two unusual triggers. So we had the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, IEEPA, and that act was used to introduce trade policy at the country level primarily. Then we also had the use of the Trade Expansion Act, Section 232, which is related to national policy kind of security concerns. And that was generally used to introduce regulations at the product level. And then finally, and I think probably the most consequential for businesses, was the complexity of these trade policy interventions. Tariffs were introduced, then delayed, then brought back. They were changed both up and down. So it was pretty hard to keep track. And what made it extra challenging was that the set of countries and products that were being affected kept changing. So it's not like you could just always follow what was happening, say, with Canada and ignore what was happening elsewhere or what was affecting other products. No, you really had to be on it. And then finally, the stacking rules were rather involved. So sometimes new tariffs would be introduced to completely replace pre-announced levels. Other times, there would be additional on top of pre-announced levels. And I can give you just a couple of examples of the confusion this caused all around. So June 2025, there was a new announcement that cars would be taxed at the 25% level on top of pre-existing MFN levels. But cars were exempt from some global reciprocal tariff of 10% that was previously in place. So you think, okay, if I'm somebody who imports cars, I have to pay this 25% tariff. Well, not so fast. If you are importing a car from Europe, from the EU to be precise, that is the tariff that was relevant to you. If you were importing a car from Canada, you had to first confirm, is this car compliant with USMCA agreements or not? If it is compliant, no duty. If it's not compliant, then actually the 25% car tariff doesn't apply. What applies is a Canada-wide tariff, and it just so happens that the Canada-wide tariff is also 25%, but it's not because of the car tariff. And then take China, so a third country. If you're importing a car from China, it's a double whammy. You pay the 25% car tariff plus the 20% China-specific tariff for a total of 45%. Yes, it was quite unprecedented in the frequency, nature, and complexity of all these announcements.
I'm confused about tariffs, but it's not my day job. The firms that are exporting to the United States, it is sort of their day job. Do we have anecdotal evidence that actually they are confused as well?
We do. It was actually pretty easy to find lots of examples in the media. And we started keeping track of that with my co-authors. And, you know, early after the Liberation Day announcements in April, you started seeing headlines like tariffs mean an economic hit, but also confusion and paperwork. So we started noticing that these words of confusion, complexity, paperwork were quite common. Later on, you started seeing language along the lines of companies can't figure out the rules of this tariff game, or confused and concerned CEOs try to figure out the new tariff regime. My favorite quote by far is by the head of Allianz, you know, one of the most prominent German insurance companies, who says, "If you are not confused, I don't know what confuses a human being." So that's quite telling. So that was August of last summer. And yes, this is anecdotal. And yes, it is pretty hard to survey firms when trade policy is so dynamic. But there is this really great survey that a couple of economists did last year in March and April of 2025. They surveyed about 4,500 firms in the US and Canada, not globally, but US and Canada. And it was remarkable. One of the questions was, how high do you think the tariff is on goods from China? Well, they were really wrong. So 45%, almost half of all firms thought that the tariff was less than 20% on average, when in fact it was about 42%. And that clearly tells us that they just didn't realize there had been a minimum of 20% tariff announced on China on top of any other pre-existing rates, and that had completely gone unnoticed. And that might suggest that firms thought tariffs were lower than they actually were. But then what adds to the confusion is that other questions in that survey revealed the opposite. So if you asked firms how often were there, so to say, liberalizing announcements, so announcements that actually were postponing or lowering tariffs, 87% underestimated the number of such announcements, which would make you think that they think the tariffs are actually higher than they were. So yes, I would say a lot of anecdotal evidence that firms were genuinely confused.
If I was planning to export to the US, I'm not, and certainly based on this conversation, I'm not planning to anytime in the near future. But if I was, I would assume that there would be some database that I could look up or some helpline I could call and say, what's my tariff? Is there?
You would be right. Under normal times, one thing you could do is to look up the tariff yourself. Large enough companies that are very active in international trade probably have a team of their own that does that. So the best source would be the U.S. International Trade Commission, which reports all elements of a statutory tariff. So the reason it's a little bit complex, even during normal times, is that the U.S., like other countries, can announce tariffs that are at the product level for all members of WTO that benefit from the MFN, Most Favored Nation policy. In addition to that, of course, the U.S., like other countries, can form bilateral or multilateral agreements with countries. And so the USITC, the U.S. International Trade Commission, will sort of list both of those, but in a very structured, organized way. And you can kind of figure out, okay, if I am from this country and I'm trading this product, this is the sum of the relevant tariffs for me. Now, what happened starting last February was that tariff announcements were not introduced with the normal routes. And as a result of that, USITC stopped reporting them the way they usually would. Instead, they would just dump it all in a special rubric, subheading 99, which is usually reserved for anything else, any other mess. So then you're sort of at sea. Good luck decoding that on your own. And essentially, I think logistics companies that are in the business of consulting international trade businesses, right, mm-hmm. could offer the service of decoding that information for you. And I suspect that large enough companies with really large operations at stake benefited from those services. I suspect many companies were too small to make that worth their while, and they would have sort of curtailed their trade activity.
It's one thing to sit around and go, what's going on? You're trying to make sense of it. What was your hypothesis about the impact of this tariff confusion on the way exporters would behave?
We thought that surely the rise in tariff rates would be disruptive. But we were genuinely curious whether uncertainty about the tariff rate in place, confusion about the actual statutory tariff might matter as well. And if it did, how important it would be. Maybe it matters, but just a little bit. In the prior literature, well, there were no episodes of tariff confusion, really. But there is prior research telling us that uncertainty about future tariffs matter.
Future tariffs, right. Yes, I've seen that research.
Exactly. And usually it's a bad thing. So there are a lot of investments companies need to make in establishing relationships. And so disrupting those is something they take very seriously because it might be hard to reinstate. If uncertainty is going up, then maybe short term you maintain the relationships you do have. Long term, it's probably bad news. You're going to form fewer trade relationships or scale down trade activity. So we broadly thought confusion might have similar effects directionally, so it might also be disruptive. But we weren't sure if it would manifest quickly enough, given that the pace of trade policy was so high. We thought, well, maybe there's just so much confusion that actually there may be no effect. Short term, you just carry on as you are.
Richard Baldwin actually put us onto this paper, and our episode with him from April, based on his book World War Trade, is the perfect companion to this episode. Follow us, and then you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Oh, and download World War Trade from cepr.org as well.
To estimate the effects of confusion and compare that to the effects of tariff levels, as you described, well, you've got one difficult data job and one almost impossible data job, it seems to me. First of all, you've got to measure the levels of tariffs at any point, and then you've got to find some way to capture the amount of confusion about those tariffs. First of all, for the levels of tariffs, where do you find your data? Do you have a database of that?
We had to essentially do all of the data collection ourselves.
Wow.
So we systematically recorded all the relevant U.S. presidential executive orders and proclamations and started processing that information one by one. We first had to determine which announcement was relevant to which country or product pairing, and then keep track of the stacking rules in place to establish how the newly introduced tariff amplified the pre-existing one, sort of compounded or replaced the pre-existing one. And in this way, we assemble what we call the U.S. Tariff Announcement Database for 2025. And at the end of the day, for each of, 230 origin countries and upwards of 18,000 10-digit product categories, we had a good record of the actual statutory tariff in place at the monthly frequency.
So then with all of the spare time that you had after doing that, you had to estimate levels of confusion. Now, you can't measure confusion directly. There is no confusometer. So what did you use to estimate confusion? And can you do that by product or region, or is it just one level of confusion?
That's exactly right. So here, our starting premise was that firms need to keep track of all the new information arriving and then process it correctly. And that both of these elements of information acquisition are quite costly. Uh-huh. And so we thought, sure, there's no confusometric. So how can we come up with proxies for the amount of information that was coming their way and the challenges of correctly inferring the tariff from that information? We said, okay, from February 2025 onwards, what was the cumulative number of announcements that had arrived up to a given point in time that were relevant to a given country and product? In some sense, it doesn't even matter whether there is an exporter, say, of cars from Japan or a U.S. importer buying cars from Japan, both parties need to know what the relevant statutory tariff is. How many announcements have arrived up to that point in time? That's what we just counted. We tallied it up. Then we were like, okay, how many possible tariff calculations might you have arrived at? There are many ways to be wrong, but let's just say, imagine that you're right or wrong. You know, imagine that you only heard some announcements or not others. What is the different number of combination of announcements you may have heard, assuming that you process each one correctly? So technically speaking, it's 2 to the power of number of announcements. But that we call tariff mess, as in the number of possible announcements. But that's an underestimate because there are many ways to be wrong. Even if you heard an announcement, maybe, you know, you didn't process it correctly. And then we wanted to gauge, well, what's the range and possible accuracy of your calculations, assuming that you heard an announcement? And so we figured, okay, what's the worst case scenario? Imagine that you only heard bad news. So what's the highest possible tariff you think might be in place? We then added up all the tariff hikes without paying attention to any of the exemptions or tariff reductions. So that gave us a tariff max. And then our last metric was, how far off are you? What's the difference between tariff max and the actual statutory tariff? So how much might you overestimate the tariff? Those were the 4 metrics we went with. Number of relevant announcements cumulatively, number of possible tariff calculations, worst case scenario, how far off were you?
Ingenious. But I would have thought that what you're measuring about tariffs might be quite closely correlated with what you're measuring about tariff confusion, which would make it very difficult to disentangle the impacts of the two. Was that the case?
You are right. That was our fear as well. Fortunately or unfortunately for businesses, there was quite a bit of variation here, especially as time went on. So what is highly correlated is the worst case scenario and the actual tariff in place early on in the period, because early on in the first few months, it was primarily tariff hikes rather than exemptions or tariff reductions. As time went by, even that correlation between our tariff max and the statutory tariff went down to about 0.5.
Wow.
Any other metric you look at is actually much less correlated. So if you think about number of announcements or tariff mess, so number of possible different tariff calculations, in the full panel, that correlation is 0.14, 0.15. By the end, in December, cross-sectionally across countries and products, that correlation is under 0.1. So it turned out remarkably that in the data, we were able to assess their separate roles.
Okay, so give me the numbers on this one, Kalina. What did you find out about how much the tariff levels and the confusion and the mess around tariffs have affected U.S. imports and the comparative size of these effects?
We were quite shocked to find that both tariffs and tariff confusion mattered.
Uh-huh.
And tariff confusion, on average, doubled the detrimental effect of the tariff hikes themselves.
Wow.
I can make that more precise in several ways, but that is a takeaway. One way to ask this is to say, well, you know, if you raise the tariff by 10%, how much lower were imports into the U.S.?
Mm-hmm.
On average, 3 to 5% lower. So here we're looking at a very high frequency from month to month, okay? If you have one more tariff announcement, holding that tariff constant, another 3% lower. So that is quite telling. This is sort of for the average country product, for the average month. By the end of the year, by December 2025, what was the cumulative impact of tariff changes and cumulative tariff confusion? And there, our estimates suggest that essentially in December 2025, U.S. imports were about 4 to 6% lower than in December 2024 because of higher tariffs. And confusion led to an additional reduction of about 7 to 12 percentage points. When I say double, that's sort of our conservative lower bound estimate. So it doubled. For some countries, it tripled the effect of the tariff hikes. And we also thought it might be interesting to actually explore this heterogeneity across countries, knowing that some of them experienced much higher tariff rates. Or, you know, maybe not higher tariff rates, but much more volatile policy announcements around those tariff rates. So that was sort of our third exercise. We said, okay, let's be as conservative as possible. Let's pick the month for each country when it faced the highest U.S. import tariff. confusion accumulates over time, tariffs might still go down. So, you know, let's just go for the month when tariffs were the highest and look at confusion up to this point. So stacking the cards against us. And for each country, we would say, okay, as of that highest peak US tariff, how much lower were its exports to the US? On average, it was 13% lower. Half of that was because of confusion. Even when you go for the highest peak tariff and its impact, associated confusion doubled the effect.
You see, I find that quite shocking because I would have thought that confusion might have played a part, but it would be a little bit around the edge. To find that it's actually bigger, I guess in how you're explaining this, that tariffs go up, down, sideways, left and right, but that just makes the confusion get bigger and bigger over time. That's an element of it. But even so, we're talking about a really big effect here.
We were very surprised. I think an important caveat is that this is a highly unusual scenario because it was a very prolonged period of very dynamic trade policy making. We're picking up very high frequency adjustments. It's very possible that in the medium to long term, these things are just going to wash out. It's also possible that firms are gaining experience in how they handle these kind of spikes to tariff costs, but also to information costs. Markets respond. So we know that when firms have searching and matching costs and contracting costs with their buyers and suppliers, logistics firms, you know, specialized intermediaries can emerge to facilitate that. We know anecdotally that some of the logistics providers in the US now started offering more of these kind of services that think about, well, what is the actual statutory tariff in place? Medium to long-term effects could well be smaller. It's just a very highly unusual episode. What should also be said is that the effect did vary across countries and products. And so for some, it could have been much lower than that.
Why is that? Is that just some products have much more complicated tariff rules around them?
Yes, so there is some of that. But what we found interesting is a role for relationships, buyer-supplier partnerships in international trade. Countries don't trade, firms trade. There's a lot of research showing that some products require a lot more coordination between buyers and suppliers in customizing the widget to the wadget. Mm-hmm. And so you need to build up those relationships over time. You need to make those relationship-specific investments. And once you've done that, you'll be very careful before you change suppliers or you reduce your order flow because you want to maintain your supply chain. You want to maintain output, you know, bearing large downstream demand shocks. And so we looked for that in the data. And yes, indeed, we did see that products that are characterized by much higher relationship-specific investments were more resilient to confusion, significantly more so. We have prior estimates of how sticky buyer-supplier relationships are, meaning you can sort of trace how often do firms add and drop their suppliers. And that seems to vary a lot across products as well, in part correlated with these relationship-specific investments, but not fully, because there may be multiple reasons why you want to hold on to your buyers and suppliers. Even if you don't need to make customized widgets for their wadgets, you need to build trust and reputation. So there is a contracting element here that has nothing to do with product customization. It's just building trust and reputation. And once you've done that, maybe you say, look, we have a well-working relationship. We can weather this storm. And maybe in the past, this was about a cost storm or these days a climate storm. And in this particular episode, it could have been an information storm. Let's just weather it out. We also noticed that products that typically have stickier buyer-supplier relationships were also much more resilient to these shocks to policy confusion. This made us think about the role of relational contracting and trusting buyer-supplier partnerships. The last thing we looked at was the role of contractual institutions, and that is something that varies country by country. Not necessarily, you know, sector by sector or firm by firm within a country, but sort of the institutional context of a given country might matter. And as economists, we're used to thinking about both formal contracting institutions, but also informal contracting institutions, namely trust. There are some excellent surveys that have captured systematic differences across countries in the degree to which they're willing to trust in foreigners. You know, this tends to be correlated with maybe linguistic or religious or cultural similarity, but there seems to be something there that is not very highly correlated with formal institutional metrics of, say, contract enforcement, rule of law, accounting standards. And so in the data, we also noticed that countries with stronger trust in foreigners were also much less responsive to the changes in trade policy in the US. tariff confusion seems to have affected them much less. Interestingly to me, at least in this high frequency, the monthly frequency, we didn't see very strong patterns with respect to the formal contract institutions. They were a bit all over the map. So it's this informal trust, similar to what I said earlier about the buyer-supplier relationship stickiness. It's this informal trust that seems to have played a role in dampening the impact of confusion on trade flows short term.
So, Kalina, it's obviously a very confusing time in the, well, the widget business, as you pointed out. All of us get confused from time to time at work when something happens. But what makes that confusion bearable is we assume that it's going to last for a few hours or a day or two at the most. From what you're saying here, this was not the case with tariff confusion, that it just carried on.
Yes, we were curious about that as well. We thought surely firms will sort of invest in information acquisition, catch up with this. Mm-hmm. Maybe the effects would be there for 2-3 months, but then they'll dissipate. Well, one thing we could do with our data is essentially construct a measure of confusion arising in the most recent 2 or 3 months because of the most recent set of confusing announcements and confusion that had built up prior to that. And then we could simply ask the data, do both recent and somewhat older confusion matter and how much? And well, the data told us that they both matter. And if anything, the effects might be a little bit stronger 2-3 months later than immediately on impact. So it does seem like within this period, you know, at least within this 12-month, highly unusual period, confusion had persistent effects. And they were exacerbated by higher tariff levels. So you could also ask, is confusion equally bad when we're talking about a 10% tariff versus a 50% tariff? No. Confusion is much more problematic for buyers and suppliers when they're uncertain about some higher benchmark, because presumably that gets them pretty close to this whole trade transaction being unprofitable.
The data you analyze goes up to December 2025. And after that, I imagine a lot of exporters must be thinking, oh, maybe it all will just quiet down a little bit and I can catch up. And of course, in February.
Welcome to the News Hour. The Supreme Court struck down most of President Trump's global tariffs today in a 6-3 decision that is a major blow to his economic agenda.
The U.S. Supreme Court has struck down a big swath of President Trump's tariffs imposed on nations all over the world last year. This opens up a lot of questions moving forward.
Which is a pretty confusing thing in itself. Do we know the effect that this has had on tariff confusion?
We don't. We are pondering extending our data collection exercise because I think that will be fascinating to study. Uh-huh. What I think might be conceptually different and therefore manifest differently in the data is that once IEEPA is off the table, the remaining means of introducing trade policy are in some sense more predictable because they take much longer.
Yep.
So usually you have to trigger an investigation process. And so firms might not know what the outcome of that investigation process might be, but at least they will have had some warning that something might be coming, I don't know, 6 months down the line. And it's more a matter of how much rather than if. I don't really know what to expect.
It was IEEPA that gave the president, well, as he presented it, gave him the authority to be able to say, okay, so it's 50% today, and then the next day, 60%, and this other country is going to have 25%.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Is there a lesson for the US government if they wanted to use tariffs as a revenue-raising exercise, then the best way to do this is to announce a tariff and then be quiet, just stick to it. And that will, for that given level of tariff, raise the most money.
I think that's absolutely right. Make up your mind and stick to it. Come out and make one clear announcement. In fact, one perverse interpretation of our estimates might be just a very random back of the envelope calculation, but you might say, you know what? You could have doubled your tariff rates had you just come out and said so. And presumably collected a lot more tariff revenue. And firms would have responded just to that once and for all. there is a good question whether, you know, tariff rates and tariff confusion change aggregate trade volume sufficiently, such that tariff confusion reduced trade by so much that it actually negated any tariff revenue you may have raised.
This is all remarkable. Thank you very much for talking about it, Kalina.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
You got to read this paper. It is discussion paper 21688 called Tariff Confusion. Authors Kalina Manova, Dennis Novy, Thomas Sampson, and Aaron Tang.
Vox Talks Economics is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber, and our editor is Andrei Zagarian. Next week on Vox Talks Economics, our final two episodes from the Paris School of Economics. Mysterious ancient treasure from the archives of the Banque de France, and much more recent treasure from three of the next generation of PhD economists.